You are listening to Radio Aryan.
Welcome to SS Britannia. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and today's date is the 12th of December 2016. As always, I have my co-host here, Subal.
Hello.
And we also have a special guest this week. We have Jez Turner from the London Forum, who has been attending court cases this week with Joshua Bonehill, our celebrated prisoner of war. How are you doing today, Jez?
Yes, very well. Thank you very much. Greetings. Hello all.
Yeah, well, I thought we'd get you on because, you know, you've got some insight into what's been happening, and you've also been trying to publicise Lawrence Burns and Ian Mallard and Alison Chablow. We've got a lot of people at the moment that are up on speech crime charges. So perhaps you'd want to give a bit of background to what happened with Joshua Bonehill and what happened in the courtroom, first of all, I guess.
Right, well, it took place at the Old Bailey. Now, this is quite unusual for thought crimes to get to the Old Bailey. Lady Jane Birdwood was tried there several years ago. So I knew trial would start on Monday, so I went along there. You go to the Old Bailey in the public gallery, you queue up, you are searched, you go through a metal detector. You can't take phones in, electronic devices, sweets, food, whole list of things. You go in there and you choose the court you want to go to. So you look outside first of all, and you look all the lists of those being tried, and they're all Asian names, Oriental names, African names, and you'll find the old white name. And if there's a white name, that usually means he's a thought criminal. So I found Joshua Bonehill's name, and a few of us went along there and sat in the gallery, and we got in there as soon as it started. So the jury weren't in there yet, and they were discussing the evidence, which bits needed photocopying better, which bits needed enlarging. These are all screen prints from the Facebook page, not the Facebook page, the Daily Bail, Joshua Bonehill's website, and Joshua Bonehill's blog, and they were talking about this. And they always referred to the Jews in this build-up as being a race. You know, these were basically white men, I would guess, just talking about things as they would when the Jews weren't listening. The defense QC, James Palfrey, was quite good, a bit timid, you know, a bit too deferential, but of course he was timid for a reason. He was on very shaky ground here. He was defending a thought criminal. So he was a bit ill at ease, and he tried to bring in some evidence that to say that the things Joshua Bonehill had written were already out there on the web. They were Guido Fawkes had covered such things, and other websites had covered such things. It wasn't unique to Joshua Bonehill. What he was writing wasn't unique. His cartoons may have been, but compared to Charlie Hebdo, these cartoons were pretty mild. Anyway, so they finally got sorted out with the evidence, and then the jury was called in. So you look down on the courtroom. You have, to the left, you have the judge, red robe, white wig. Then you have the court secretary, court clerk, with his back to the judge typing away. Then you have the two QCs facing him. You have James Palfrey and Philip Stott, who's for the prosecution. Philip Stott is from the Crown Prosecution Service, and he had a huge team behind him of people, helpers, secretaries. Then you had James Palfrey defending just him on his own. That was it. And then you had behind the legal team, behind James Palfrey, you had the glass sort of wall, and behind that you had a very relaxed, very nonchalant Joshua Bonehill sitting there, quite enjoying himself, actually, I think. Makes a change from a prison cell, doesn't it? And then the jury was called in. We couldn't see the jury, because there's more than 12 called in at first, and then they do a jury ballot. So you couldn't see probably about 20 people there. And the court clerk pulled out the cards from the ballot and called out the names of the jurors to go and take their place in the jury box, and 12 of them came out. 9 of them were female. That was the first shock. I thought, my God, what? You know, 9 female. Shouldn't it be 6 female? Three of those females were non-white. And then there was three white males, but two of those didn't look very, very masculine, really. So I thought, oh my gosh, this is how justice really works, because justice is only good as the jury. It all depends on what an average jury will convict on. And the Crown Prosecution Service, they know this. When they're deciding whether to try a case, they will only bring it to court if they've got a very good chance of winning. What they don't want is to lose a thought crime case. It's like having a show trial in the Soviet Union and then losing. They don't want it, you know? So, but they know that the jury is pretty much brainwashed and wimpish. So there we had that first sort of shock. Then what happened is the prosecution, the QC for the prosecution, Philip Stott, reads out the charge. And the charge was racially aggravated harassment. And he brought up five pieces of evidence, which were articles that Joshua Bonehill had written. And then the defense just says, well, okay, you know, that's all very well, but it's a load of nonsense, really. Then the star attraction came in, which was MP Luciana Berger. Berger. They discussed this before the jury was called in. Is it Berger or Berger? They settled on Berger. And she's actually pregnant. She's carrying one of those badges saying, baby on board, give me a seat on the tube, on the bus, whatever. And I didn't know she was pregnant. She looked quite fat and quite dark and nothing like her photograph in the press. Nothing. The mass media are very on side with the powers that be. They always make them look good. You know, they make Prince Harry's girlfriend look very white. They make that woman who's bringing the Brexit legal challenge look very white. They make Luciana Berger look very white. But in real life, she's not a pretty person. But that's as it is. She knows what she's doing in that witness box. She knows what she's doing. She's very vague. She's very acts to sort of hurt little kitten who's shocked by it all, you know. And first of all, the prosecution question her very politely and just allow her to sort of reel out how hurt she is and shocked and, you know, terrified she is by all this sort of stuff. And we thought, well, you know, that's fair enough. And then this timid, you know, I thought of the whole courtroom as little mice in awe, hypnotized by this Luciana Berger, this big fat cat looking down at them. That's what it was like. Apart from Joshua Bonehill, he was very relaxed. But the prosecution QC actually pulled her apart completely. He would give a question, she would give the answer, and then he would just reiterate something and then allow a pregnant pause. This is where a sensible jury, a wise jury, a clever jury, a jury with some backbone, a jury that could think, would have picked up on what he was conveying to them. But these were just wimpish, brainwashed dolts, you know, they wouldn't pick it up on it. So there were several things that Palfrey said to her. For instance, he would say to her, are you aware, Miss Berger, what satire is? And she would say something like, whoa, 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 whoa. And he would say, well, satire is jokes. It's ridicule. It's making fun of things. Wouldn't you say that a lot of these articles are satire? And she'd say, well, I'm not sure of that. You know, this photograph of me, with a smacking. There were several photographs, cartoons, memes, whatever you want to call them, graphics, that were in the articles. One was her head on a rat's body. One was her smacking a little baby. No, hang on, holding a little baby with the face of Chuka Amuma, who's a black Labour MP. One was her being, she was spanking David Miliband. And there was also some sort of graphic with her garlic bread. Lord knows how that came into it. Anyway, she was offended by these cartoons. She said, look, these are not real. You're not beginning to surely say that this is real, that you are literally spanking David Miliband, or that you were holding Chuka Amuma in your arms as a baby, you know. And she was saying, well, these photographs are for my personal Instagram account. And I was offended, you know. Yes, but Miss Berger, they are online. They are public accessible. They are public knowledge. They are not, you know, this is satire. So that was the first thing. then he asked her, look, these things weren't sent to you, were they? And she goes, no, they were sent to me by advisors, a PA, Jewish charities, that sort of thing. Ms. Berger, how often do you look at these websites, the Daily Mail, which is Britain against left-wing extremism, and Joshua Bonham's blog? And she goes, never. Another pregnant pause. Ms. Berger, all this stuff is in the public interest, isn't it? Cash for questions, you know. Joshua Bonham's called you a money grabber, but a money grabber, that's fair game for an MP who was involved in the cash for questions scandal. She was accused of bullying her Labour Party, local party organisation in Liverpool. The chairman had to resign. You know, so Bonehill had called her a dominatrix. Well, isn't this fair enough? You know, it's satire. It's, you know, someone who domineers is a dominatrix. There was a lot of this sort of stuff. For instance, her advocacy of Jewish groups. She's her whole career has been pushing Jewish interests and against people who expose Jewish interests, Jewish power. She was on the National Union of Students. She was involved with that, and she made herself such a nuisance that they got rid of her. You know, and this is National Union of Students. They couldn't cope with it anymore. Everything was anti-Semitic. She is the chair of the Labour Jewish movement, and Palfrey asked her, well, isn't this article, particular article that Bonehill has written, isn't it about representation? You know, Jews make up how many percentage of people in Britain, Ms. Berger? And she said, 0.2%, she said. Right. Okay, Ms. Berger, in that case, that means 1 in 500 MPs should be Jewish. How many MPs are Jewish, Ms. Berger? Pause. You know, if silence could speak. I'm not sure. I don't know. Ms. Berger, you are chair of the Labour Jewish movement, and you don't know how many Jewish MPs there are in Parliament. It was things like that that should have made the jury begin to realise that their evidence was very shaky, that the prosecution case was very flaky indeed. She was actually sent into Liverpool, a safe seat because of her Jewish background. That's what Joshua Bonehill sort of alleged, and others have alleged this. This is public knowledge, common knowledge. It's no big deal. She got Garen Helm jailed. She could have just asked for an injunction about his tweet, which was a picture of her with a yellow Star of David, with the tag "Jews." Trust a Jew, always to behave like a Jew. This was in response, I believe, to her pushing for compulsory sex education for four-year-olds. And what that means in today's educational system, it means transgenderism, homosexuality, and all that nonsense. So that's what got Garen Helm annoyed. He did that tweet. He was imprisoned for a month. And then when Joshua Bonehill was facing the same sort of situation, John Nimmo had a go at her, but he sent her a message saying, you know, watch your back, you know, which was considered to be enough to get him jailed as well. But the QC, James Palfrey, said to her, well, Ms. Berger, you know, isn't it true that a lot of MPs are Jewish? I mean, at the time of these articles were written, David Cameron was the leader of the Conservative Party. Is he not partially Jewish? And she went, oh, I don't know about that. Isn't Miliband, isn't he also Jewish? Oh, I'm not sure about that, you know. She just kept dodging issues. I mean, there was five articles. Article 4 didn't even mention Luciana Berger. Article 5 was all about the campaign launch from America that was all over and finished with now. Some people in America launched a campaign to, with the emphasis, stay legal, criticize Luciana Berger on social media. And it was about that. So, you know, two of the articles weren't even anything to do with harassment at all, you know, or encouraging harassment, shall we say, you know. It's all double standards and hypocrisy anyway when you think about it, because Charlie Hebdo magazine's done stuff far more aggressive than Bonehill ever did. The front cover of Charlie Hebdo, few years ago had a cartoon of the Virgin Mary, which was completely obscene and, you know, very awful. Virgin Mary using a sex toy, for heaven's sake. So, you know, we've had, you know, we have jokes about blonde girls and Essex girls. Nobody bothers about that. We've had people on Radio 4 joking about the murder of Eugene Taylor Blanche. No bother there. We've had an Asian woman student, member of the National Union of Students in London, set up a hashtag, kill white men. Again, no action. So it's all double standards. The law is kept grey and ambiguous and kept so on purpose. So the powers that can, powers that be, can prosecute when they feel like it.
And that's what it seems to me, Jez, sorry to interject there. It seems to me as if they're just finding people that they can pick on, that they find the person first of all that they want to attack or silence, and then they dig up whatever they can to try and put them in jail. I mean, if it had been any other politician's head that had been superimposed on a rodent, I don't think anything would have been said about it, because that was one of his images. I mean, that's all you were talking about here is funny images. Two instances were nothing whatsoever to do with Luciana Berger. I think what it boils down to is she didn't like the campaign that was waged against her after she jailed Garen Helm, as you said, a young man, 21 years old, jailed for a month when all he's done is send her a tweet calling her a Jew. Because she didn't like that campaign against her, she's been looking for somebody to make a scapegoat, for somebody to attack for that. So she found Joshua Bonehill, and because Joshua Bonehill voiced his support for that campaign, saying that was a good campaign, so that's why she went after him. And after talking to Lawrence Burns this week, he said they're more interested in digging up stuff about your life to say, look, he's a nasty Nazi, rather than the actual evidence that they've got against you. It's all about character assassination and silencing people rather than, you know, actually looking at the meat of what was actually being said. Because if you think about it, superimposing a head onto a rodent, that's nothing at all. He hadn't made any threats of violence to her. And yet that's what the judge used in his summing up, I believe, was to, and also she said she feared for her life. But, you know, how can you fear for your life from what people say about you when, you know, I can remember people saying all those politicians should be lined up against the wall and shot, or those traitor politicians should be hanged for their crimes. Yet if you say that about someone who happens to be Jewish, oh, apparently that's a credible death threat and the person should be locked up in prison. I mean, the fact that he had six women on that jury as well, I think that helped.
Nine
women on the jury.
Nine women. 75%. 75%, yeah.
How can they get away with doing something like that? What about equality?
Yes. I mean, we get into the stage, fast approaching the stage now, where if you use the word Jew without the requisite amount of praise, you can be in trouble. The law we've got is not really a law at all. It's sort of a, it's not what is done. It depends on the state of your mind at the time you were doing it. Or so, you know, racially aggravated harassment. He didn't harass her. Look. The summing up was basically, look, this young man is accused of racially aggravated harassment of Luciana Berger. He's not accused of racism. He's not accused of anti-Semitism. Such things are subjective. They cannot be pinned down. They are not crimes. Harassment is a crime. If he has not harassed her, he must be found guilty. However nasty you think he is, however politically incorrect he is, however racist he is innocent. But the jury are stupid. The jury just think, well, hang on, we'll turn a blind eye to the evidence. That he's a nasty person. Let's convict. He's politically incorrect. Let's convict. He's extremist. Let's convict. Hence the hunt by the police to find bookshelves. You know, Thomas Mayer's bookshelf, for heaven's sake. He probably had 1,000 books in his flat. No doubt they found a little section that had his Third Reich books and took a photograph of that. I mean, there are mothers up and down the country now looking at their son's bookshelves thinking, oh my gosh, you know, perhaps he's got some dodgy books there. These books are not illegal. There is no list of illegal books. you know, in the olden days, the Vatican had a list of books you shouldn't read. The Freemasons have a list of books you should not have in your house if you're a Freemason. But there is no list of illegal books. Thomas Mayer could have had hundreds and thousands of politically incorrect books. It is no crime. And to bring this sort of evidence along to say, well, hang on, you know, Joshua Bonehill has some dodgy books. Let's get some dodgy books. You know, they played some videos to illustrate Joshua Bonehill's views. But the videos were, there was no hatred in there. It was, one was about the showroom in North London. One was an interview with an American radio station, Renegade Broadcasting. It was a 2.5 minute interview. 2.5 minutes they took from a whole 2 hour interview to illustrate Joshua Bonehill's mind. And it, this was partly the interviewer speaking, said, look, this is crazy. You know, in Liverpool, there are three MPs and two of them are Jewish. And Bonehill said, yes. Now, what is that all about? It's just saying to the jury, this man is a nasty man. So I would advise anybody who's in our movements or on the fringes, avoid vulgarisms, okay? If you're going to talk about these things, okay, talk about it in an academic way. Avoid vulgarisms. And as for jokes, whew, you know, I mean, they are Lawrence Burns, who's in Cambridge, on trial at the moment. They are accusing him of putting links on his Facebook page to other sites and other jokes, you know, not putting jokes on it, but having links to other jokes. So it's a very strange situation. It's almost like you would have to cover yourself. You'd have to say, this is a joke. This is satire. Stay legal. Do not commit crimes. That sort of thing. That might actually help. But I would avoid vulgarisms if you can. But it's all up in the air and very grey, because you could have a Jewish Labour MP making jokes and using vulgarisms and it would be okay. I mean, Spitting Image, remember Spitting Image? This sort of comedy thing. Horrible puppets, horrible, disgusting puppets they were. Spitting everywhere and horrible, you know. But that was fine because it was liberalism doing it. Charlie Hebdo's fine because that's liberalism doing it. When you turn against those who, as Voltaire said, you can't criticise, then you're in trouble. But it is totally mad, you know. Crazy, you know. Anyone who thinks, and yet, you know, in France they have Jewish organisations that, like politically incorrect bounty hunters, anti-Semite bounty hunters, they go around finding people to convict of anti-Semitism, and they get a cut. They have to get a percentage of the fines imposed.
They get rewarded for it as well. Then
this is happening in this country now.
I'm sure they're paying out rewards to get people to grass people up or inform on people whose opinion they don't like to this new police task force that they've got in London. I think that's what the money they've given them for, is to reward people for coming up with people's opinions that they disagree with. It seems to me it's like the witch trials, where they would accuse somebody of being a witch. And then they would come out with a character assassination of them and say, well, they said this and they said that. And it wasn't actually about an actual crime that they committed. It was just about people pointing at them and saying, well, they're a witch because they did this. And that's what it seems to me to be like here, when they're showing you interviews of what he's saying to Renegade Broadcasting, when they're showing you videos of an advert for the Shomrin demonstration. I mean, what's that got to do with him harassing somebody? I mean, that's Joshua Bonehill himself being harassed by people digging around in what he's done elsewhere, so that they can character assassinate him. I mean, did he send tweets to Berger, or did he just produce an
never
article?
Sent anything to Luciana Berger.
Well, how can that be harassment then?
It isn't. It is not harassment.
Any
member of the public in the public domain, anyone who's in a public office, necessarily will attract criticism. And in theory, if you criticize somebody twice online, that could be classed as harassment, according to that court on last week, you know. Well, that's a bit ridiculous, because I'm sure there has been more than two articles written by thousands of people about the same MP or about this and that, you know. But that's the starting point. More than two articles written about somebody. That's the first tick in the box they need to suggest harassment. But this is ridiculous because, this person is in the public sphere. Okay, she's female, but that shouldn't alter anything. She's Jewish. That shouldn't alter anything. You know, So it's all a load of absolute nonsense, as convicts say. It's nonsense. You know, it's a nonsense crime, you know. And to get 2 years for that is faintly ridiculous. The Jews go on about, oh, you know, all these people, they say there's a Jewish conspiracy. They're wrong, they're wrong, they're wrong. And yet there's certainly a Jewish conspiracy to convict anyone who they accuse of being anti-Semitic. Certainly that going on, you know. I mean, do they think that by convicting these people, they'll make them change their views and become philo-Semites? You know, you think Joshua Bono will now like Jews? Do you think people who support Joshua Bono will like Jews? I mean, Joshua Bono's, you know, a young lad. He's a bit of a tearaway, you know, a bit of a scamp. You know, he gets up to all kinds of things. But there's other people, you know, Alison Chablow, who's written a few songs, and this Jewish charity, this word charity, yes. We talk about philanthropists like Ronson. I think Subol was talking about Gerald Ronson, weren't you, Subol, earlier on?
Yeah.
And this word philanthropists means they give money to certain organizations, but it's always to the right sort of organizations, isn't it? And the campaign against anti-Semitism have brought a private prosecution against Alison Chablow for her song Survivors. And this song is all about people who've been exposed as frauds. They've all written books and been celebrities because they were in the Holocaust. And it's been proved that they were not in the Holocaust, that their books are completely made up. And everyone agrees this across the political spectrum. Even the Jews have disowned them.
They've admitted it themselves, haven't they? They
admitted themselves, yeah.
The whole hoaxes.
There we are. But she's going to court over it because, those who must be obeyed, those who have the power, those who we cannot name, want it so.
How can they say it's incitement to racial hatred when she's got an audience laughing, when she's a comedian and she's got people laughing? That's not people. You know, you don't laugh when you're in a state of hatred, wanting to violently attack people, do you? You don't laugh. You're not sort of smiling at the time, and that's what she's been charged with. And it seems to me that Joshua Bonehill is just trying to be a comedian. He's a satirist, and he's made up political cartoon images of these politicians. And yet, because they're Jews, you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to make up a cartoon of them. Apparently, that's harassment. This is what I think. If liberals could only be told the facts of this case from this point of view, I don't think any of them could support it. It's purely because they get told what's happened, but then it gets linked with Thomas Mayer killing Joe Cox, even though there's no link whatsoever. But every single one of the articles that they've produced talking about any of these thought criminals, they've linked them with Thomas Mayer and the murder of Joe Cox and death threats on Twitter, when none of these people involved have sent any death threats. I mean, Alison Chablow is singing comedic songs. What's that got to do with somebody killing a politician that has no links at all to any nationalist organisations in Britain?
It's unforgivable. You are ridiculing their ideology. Their ideology cannot withstand ridicule. I would say that ridicule, cartoons, jokes, and songs, I would say ridicule is far more effective at destroying their ideology, because their ideology depends on fear, keeping us scared, keeping us terrified. And when you just ridicule it, and you reveal it for the idiocy, you know, this ideology for the idiotic lunacy it is, it all comes crashing down, and they have to stamp down on ridicule. That's my view of it. This is why Andrew Anglin's so successful, 4 million unique hits a month, the Daily Stormer satire. It's just, you can't joke about things these days. And when you do, it's very funny, you know.
Well, yeah, forbidden jokes. I mean, it was always, you know, the racist jokes that were funny in the 70s. And now that they've forbidden making these jokes about the different nations and the different types of people, all the jokes that they make now are to do with pedophilia. Or homosexuality. I've heard some really, really filthy, disgusting jokes, and that's all that they are left with. Once you take out the mocking the differences between us, then that's all you're left with, is laughing at something because it's so disgusting. Whereas, you know, telling racist jokes, they're not intended in a nasty way, most of them.
Jokes, ridicule, making people laugh, actually diffuses any anger, resentment, fury that's building up. I would say, you know, that if somebody like Thomas Mayer, let's say Thomas Mayer was a person he's meant out to be, I think if he'd socialized with people and seen some jokes online, it would have diffused him, you know? But no, I think it doesn't work to their agenda. Ridiculing their stupid ideology of egalitarianism and white disprivilege does not work to their agenda, and they must shut anything down that does that.
Subal, have you got any comments you'd like to make on this? I know we had a few connection problems there at the beginning, but I think we've got you back online now.
Yeah. God, yeah, I know. It's really bad news. I can only think that it's really problematic because, you know, like Jez was saying, that one of the reasons why the alt-right and why the Daily Stormer is so successful is because it uses satire, and we're making such great advances on the internet with the whole troll army and the Twitter wars and, you know, and Pepe and the memes. And we're really kind of winning in this particular realm in America anyway. And then in England, they're just shutting it down. So it's really bad news. The only thing I can suggest off the top of my head is that we need some kind of offshore, British type Daily Stormer troll army of some shape or some form, some offshore satirical website where you can kind of like poke fun at Britain without actually being able to get arrested.
That doesn't work though, because Simon Shepherd and Stephen Whittle, they did similar things. They did some cartoons about various myths of the 20th century, shall we say. And they, because they uploaded them from Britain, they were still subject to British law. They went to America to get asylum, but it wasn't granted to them, even though what they did was not, no crime in America. So it's again double standards and hypocrisy.
Oh, you mean you could get extradited?
Yeah, they fled to America because they put stuff up.
Right.
Ridiculous.
They claimed asylum, didn't they?
Maybe you could go to Ecuador. I mean, I heard that they don't extradite from Ecuador.
And the embassy in Ecuador, yeah, of course. Yeah, that's a point.
Yeah, that's okay.
No, I'm talking about, when I say offshore, I mean leave Britain.
Oh, yeah.
Go and set up. Like, I know there's a famous anti-Zionist blogger. His name's Eric Dubay. He lives in Thailand. I can only assume it's because he doesn't want to get arrested. And he's got a YouTube following of like 80,000 subscribers bashing the Zionists. So, you know, maybe we need somebody from Britain to do something like that. Go and live in Ecuador, get funded by British nationalists, and attack from a foreign nation. Perhaps that's what we're going to be forced to do. I don't know. That's the first thing that comes to my head, really.
Well, I think, you know, we have got help from our white brothers in America and in countries that have less stringent free speech laws. And there were 2,000 tweets that were sent to Luciana Berger. And, you know, they've managed to find 2,500. And they managed to find one person, this Nimmo chap from Britain, that they've managed to throw the book at. And what they've done is they've gone after Joshua Bonehill because he's voiced approval of this campaign, basically. So if there are these campaigns, is anybody British, either don't get involved in it or take precautions so that it can't be linked to you, and possibly don't voice your approval of it. You know,
let me get this straight. If I say on this radio program, if I say that I approve Andrew Anglin sending a troll army to attack this MP, then I could theoretically get thrown in jail for saying that.
Well, she could try and character assassinate you.
Right, okay. I don't approve
I guess
it.
I guess that's the precedent that's been set.
Don't
I guess
do
that's
it.
The precedent.
Stay legal.
Don't do it. Andrew Anglin, don't send your troll army. Please, don't do it. Yeah, okay.
Well, I think that operation's over now.
In court, Luciana Berger was getting a bit annoyed with this QC who was questioning her and said, the Daily Stormer site, you know, and she was spitting venom, you know, and Andrew Anglin, more venom, you know, like a cat who's, you know, cornered in a corner and she's spitting. She said, Andrew Anglin, there's a Europe-wide arrest warrant out for him. Outstanding. And I thought, oh, well, I never knew that. You know, a European-wide arrest warrant.
For anti-Semitism, for not loving the Jews. You can be arrested for not loving the Jews.
Yeah, he's a great guy. You can really tell how well you're doing by how much you make the enemy hate you, I think.
I think in a sense, all these, I mean, I made a list. I gave a, you know, I was giving a few speeches recently, and Paul Pitt's got an outstanding case against him because he's organized the No Refugees marches in Dover. Jack Renshaw's got things outstanding against him because he said that Hitler's only problem was showing mercy to the Jews. He's got other things as well. Alison Shablow, Lawrence Burns. There's quite a few people, and there's all the people from Dover who defended the marches against communists. Communists wearing balaclavas and carrying clubs, by the way, have attacked the march. There's a lot of people who are going to prison over free speech issues, prisoners of conscience, let's call them. And this could be a sign that the establishment is beginning to panic, losing its hold. I mean, we saw this with Hillary Clinton, who gave a speech recently about Pizzagate, you know, the panic on her face. The internet has meant that the truth is getting out there quickly and getting around. And a lot of people who aren't necessarily of our movement are having a lot of sympathy for our movement and the ideals we are pushing. I mean, if this Pizzagate thing, if even 1% of this Pizzagate paedophile scandal is true, it is enough to damn them forever and into eternity. I mean, it sends shivers down your spine. You go and have a look on the Pizzagate Some Questions on the Daily Stormer website. And the photographs and the things in there, blimey, you know. I mean, think about it. How do they control people? How do the powers that be control their servants, shall we say? Now, they can use bribery. Okay, but not everybody's venal. They can use bullying. Not everyone's a coward. They can use brainwashing, but not everyone's that stupid. And a lot of these top-level servants aren't stupid. So what do they use? I reckon they use blackmail. And what is so serious, what is so damnable in today's permissive anything-goes society that is still has the shock value to ruin you if revealed? And I would say paedophilia. I would say they get these people to these parties, they drug them, they get them drunk, they photograph them, they film them, then they blackmail them. And to sweeten the pill, they bribe them, they brainwash them, they bully them, whatever, you know. But this is what happens, I think, and this is how they control people. Because these servants of the New World Order, right, are destroying their own people. They're destroying everything on behalf of their masters. Now, to do that, that takes some pretty serious, you know, self-brainwashing, you know. We have to ask ourselves whether this Pizzagate thing is the tip of the iceberg, you know, the tip of the tip of the iceberg. Possibly there is something in it. Perhaps these paedophile rings, perhaps they have a far darker purpose than just cheap thrill, shall we say. What do you think?
They do evil for the sake of doing evil. There's nothing more wicked and evil than doing something like that to an innocent child. And when you see children, you see innocence, and you know, and your heart lifts at the innocence and the joy of childhood. And these evil bastards, they see a child, and they want to corrupt them, steal that innocence, and hurt that child. And that's the absolute opposite of everything that anybody normal feels. You know, these people are satanic. They claim to be worshipping Lucifer, the Satanism that they are involved in. I was just watching a video before we actually went online, and there was somebody that was drawing links with these early Hindu texts that were calling them Rakshasas, saying that the government will be full of Rakshasas, which are man-eaters, literal cannibals, and also that take everything away from a man. If they see somebody that does something that upsets them, they take away all his worldly goods, all his worldly riches, which is what they would do to the people that are speaking out against the great evil. So there was this prophecy years ago that's the way that our governments would go. And of course, that's the way that our governments are. And to be doing this to a whole people, wiping us out, replacing us with others, that's so alien to them to actually do that to your own people. They have to be psychopathically distorted, mentally distorted in some way to be doing that to us in the first place, because we are supposedly their own people. There has to be something extra to them that we don't have for them to do it. Something extra evil part.
I think there's something in the Bohemian Grove when they have the cremation of care. I think there's something in the way that ritual is worded, the cremation of care, in that what they do is, as part of their black magic ritual, where they go through this fake, well, on the outside it's a fake human sacrifice. I'm sure they do something else, you know, behind closed doors. But it's a case of cremating your morality. They put you, you know, in these secret societies, they put you through these dark rituals and they make you do these horrible things. Like they made David Cameron have sex with a pig and, you know, different things like this. And it's designed to destroy your innate sense of morality so that you simply just don't care about what is right and wrong anymore. And then you can join their club. I think that's what's behind it in part.
Hmm. I think also if you look at, if you switch everything around and say, look, okay, that when they try to convict free speech campaigners, they try and look on their bookshelves and try and find justification for their state of mind, shall we say, or their worldview or their philosophy. Well, let's look at the powers that be that control the West, control white nations. Let's look at their state of mind, their philosophy. What have they done the last 60 years? They have legalized pornography, right? When I was a child or before I was born, you could not even buy magazines, you know, the Playboy magazine. You couldn't even buy a Playboy magazine. It was that undercover. It was prescribed. It was banned, right? They've legalized pornography. We had the fashion world pushes heroin type chic. MTV music channels, pop music, whatever you want to call it, it pushes basically softcore pornography. We have sexualized children. What is the outcome of this? You know, is it a far leap from all that to Pizzagate? Is it a far leap? Our rulers have institutionalized pornography, institutionalized pedophilia, to actually having secret societies for their servants, you know, and to blackmail them and get them involved in all this sort of stuff. I would say that if the roles were reversed and I was QC for the prosecution and I had the government in the dock, I'd say, look, you have allowed all this pornography. You have allowed this pornography fashion. You've allowed this sexualization of children. You've destroyed morality. You've destroyed ethics. You've destroyed notions of right and wrong. Therefore, I will convict you just on that. You know, I don't need any evidence about Pizzagate, really. You know, there's enough there to convict you. Oh, never mind the invasion. You know, every year a million people come to this country and the government lets them in. You know, never mind all the abortions. Never mind the fashion, feminism to not have children, but to have a career and instead put your mothering instincts on refugees or any other politically correct campaign. So, yeah, I think that thing with Subol was talking about, I think that is the icing on the cake to ensure the subservience of their servants. But and you can convict them on that, or you can convict them on all this other stuff they've been doing, you know, macro or micro. It's all damning.
I think what's happened is we've been lulled into a false sense of security. We've been told everyone's fine, nobody's out to get us, and yet all our ancient scriptures, from the Bible through to the Hindu scriptures, all tell us that we've got these devils living among us. You know, we've got people that look like us that are literal devils and demons, and what they do is they corrupt children. You know, they look at people like Jimmy Savile. You know, hundreds of children are abused by him. Look at what's going on with the football and the sport at the moment, when you've got all these football coaches, again, that abuse hundreds and hundreds of children. We're not talking about some sexual orientation here. We're talking about somebody wanting to hurt somebody in the most evil, wicked possible way possible, basically. And the end result of a lot of it is to create lots of homosexuals. I mean, that's the only way you can create more homosexuals is to abuse young children. And instead of going after all the pedophiles and getting rid of them, the way that they've handled this is to say, oh no, homosexuality is perfectly normal. We'll tell everyone that it's perfectly normal for these young boys to turn into homosexuals. As if, and the extension from that is that the abuse of the young boys that turn them into the homosexuals, that's just perfectly normal as well. And of course, that's what they're trying to normalize now. But I think that's a large part of it. I was just thinking about this the other day, how instead of stamping out pedophilia, what we've done is we've normalized the results of pedophilia. Yeah.
So we're messing with the symptoms rather than the source. I mean, the source of the river, the spring, has been polluted, and those further downstream trying to filter out the pollutants are getting arrested and prosecuted. We've got this polluted river and we can't work out why it's polluted, you know, and all the liberals do is say, stop trying to clean the water up, you know.
Yeah.
Where we should be looking at, yeah, it's very...
Drink more of it. Isn't this water lovely? Have some more of this. Isn't this fine? Don't you love the taste of this? And that's their way of dealing with it. And of course, then you become completely desensitized to things, and you don't see what's going on around you.
How do you get to the stage where people don't mind crime? You decriminalize it, and then they don't mind. It's no longer a crime. You know, it's very simple, really. They control society. They control the mass media. They can make right wrong, and wrong right.
Well, they think they can. They think they can, but you know, we have what's wrong and what is right. We have that written in our hearts. We know the golden rule, and we also have, you know, that's what our religions are for. That's why we have this. This is good and this is bad. It doesn't matter what the circumstances are. It's always bad, and this is always good.
That's why they hate religion. The religion always gives you a constant of what is true, what is good, what is noble, what is good, what is wrong, and it doesn't change. This is why they hate it. Thou shalt not mock the gods. Don't mock the gods. It was a Roman, you know. Those who the gods want to destroy, they first make mad, you know. And that's why they got to get rid of anything that keeps us sane, anything that keeps us constant, you know, keeps us on the straight and narrow. Religion is a hindrance to them, you know, a metaphysical hindrance. They've got to get rid of it because it is completely opposed to liberalism. You could say that God is anti-Semitic, or at least God is against liberalism. God is against the Jewish agenda. God is against all this nonsense, you know. And that's why they must destroy God.
Well, they want to get rid of that final arbitrator, you know, that you can finally appeal to, which you used to be able to appeal to before. You used to be able to say, well, the Bible says it's wrong, so it's wrong. There's no debate about that. Homosexuality is wrong. Divorce is wrong. Race mixing is wrong. Usury is wrong. It says so in the Bible. That's our scriptures. That's the final word on it. No, there isn't any debate.
All these things destroy societies. You can say they're wrong because they destroy society, but they've hidden the destruction through the mass media, through brainwashing, so we don't realize it's going on. You know, there are many ways you can say these things, all these things you're talking about, are wrong, but they managed to hide it from us, you know. It's very clever, really, when you think about it. Very cunning, very clever.
I think another aspect of that, or another result of taking the religion out of it, is that there's no more fear of punishment, and there's no more of this idea that you're being watched by God all the time, which you used to have. People, you didn't used to need closed circuit television because people knew that they were being watched by their creator all the time. And when people would take their oaths of office, they would take that very seriously because they were taking an oath before God. You know, this is what it's saying. Don't take oaths in vain. Don't take the Lord's name in vain. That means if you take an oath and you swear an oath to God or swear an oath on the Bible, then you would have to keep it. And the whole of our structure of state is based upon the fear of what would happen if you break that oath. If you take God out of the question and you start promoting atheism and getting rid of religion, what is the point in any of those oaths? Well, you know, why should anybody actually behave in a moral and upstanding way if the oath means nothing, if there's no fear of any punishment, no eternal punishment, if they do wrong at the end of it? You know, that's another aspect of it all, of taking religion out of it, is a whole of the state infrastructure is based upon that. So once you take that out, what is there to hold that infrastructure together anymore apart from force? All you've got is the power of force. We've got the might to crush you. That's why we're in power. Whereas before, you could say they're in power because they are obeying God's law. They are answerable to God. They are obeying the laws set down by God. That's why they're in power. Whereas now, they're in power because they'll crush us if we fight back. As we see when you criticize them, as we're seeing with these court cases, people that mock those in power now, are being silenced by being sent to prison. I think another person that you were talking about there, is it Ian Mallard? Is he a lawyer or a solicitor? I mean, that's pretty high up to be involved in this, to be criticising the Jews. Do you want to talk a little bit about him, maybe, Jez?
Well, he's a barrister. He's even higher than that. He's a barrister. for personal reasons, he hasn't practiced for a while, but he's a barrister, so he's top as you go, as high as you can go. And he is a nationalist. He is very wise gentleman, very intelligent. And I rather think they struck him off because he would not be able to defend people like this. I think there's a big campaign looming. I think this new Jew Inquisition, shall we say, they want to get into our mind and stop us thinking, basically.
Well, that's what it is. It's an Inquisition. It's just like the Inquisition. I mean, he must have thought that he was within the law with what he was doing as well.
Of course. He's a barrister. He knows what the law is. He hasn't broken any laws. He has just expressed some political views that aren't approved, shall we say. But there's plenty of Marxist barristers, plenty of anarchist barristers, plenty of capitalist barristers, all political spectrums, and yet they've never been struck off. You know. So what does that tell you?
Oh yeah, I mean, what was he doing? Was he sending tweets? I think is what he was doing.
Yeah, tweets. You know, but they're just links to other things, really. You know, just things about the Second World War, anti-communist type things. Nothing vulgar.
Just making information available to people.
What's that?
Just making information available to people. Then.
That's right. You know, what do you think of this sort of thing? You know, this is this tweet shows you that's, you know, now who's that famous Soviet general who we all think is a wonderful guy? Zhukov? Lost 5 million men under his command. 5 million men, he got rewarded, you know, we think he's a hero, we think he's a good commander. And basically the Soviets only won the Second World War because of American aid anyway. But, you know, just simple things like that he's been putting out. Just exposing political correctness, really, but that's the crime, isn't it? You know, you expose the ridiculousness of political correctness, you expose the double standards, you can end up in trouble.
So he's been struck off just purely for political views, not for...
Political views, exactly.
Not so, been accused
no of... Crime, no crime. No crime. He knows what he's doing. He's a very clever man.
Didn't any of his... anybody try to defend him? Any of his barrister friends?
Well, he's got... Personal, he's very busy at the moment, you know, with personal issues, family issues, and you know, he didn't really think it would succeed because it's so ridiculous. You know, the political views, political view, it's a free country, isn't it? You know, and he didn't think that the Bar Council would let it pass like that because he had probably more trust in them than they deserved. But we need to get a network of people together who have legal experience, because the coming battle will be a lawfare battle. You know, the ideological battle is moving to the courts now.
Can I just say something? In your article, you were recommending that young people should try to become solicitors or try to go into law so they could help fight this battle, this legal battle, as you say. Do you know anything about it? Do you have to go through university to do that? Can you do an open university degree to become a barrister? I don't really know much about it. I know you have to join one of the four inns, is it? They have around the what's the process?
I'm not a legal expert, but you can become a solicitor. Most trials do not involve a barrister. These are Crown Court trials, the Old Bailey type trials, a barrister. A lot of other ones, you just have a common or garden lawyer. Now, to become one of those is the first step to becoming a barrister, shall we say. It's the first step on the long road to becoming a judge. Now, I don't know how you become one of those, whether you need to do a law degree or what sort of law degree. But I think anyone who wants to make a decent living and help the cause could do a lot worse than becoming a lawyer, because at the very least, you know, you can help our organizations through mundane issues. You can help people who are nationalists, and you are perfectly okay to do that, providing you do not express any political views yourself. So there are many lawyers who are willing to defend our people on free speech issues. But they're very careful. They do not express political views, which is what Ian Millard did. So I don't know the ins and outs of it, but it shouldn't be that hard to find out. But I would suggest anyone at school now, there aren't many decent jobs left in the West anymore. There's no industry left. Do you want to really be a civil servant, you know, and work for the enemy? We need people to do everything, of course. You know, a lot of civil servants do very fine jobs and aren't, don't agree with what the enemy is doing. But if you really want to get a bang for your buck, you know, then you should become a lawyer, definitely.
Well, it does seem to me that a lot of white nationalists, well, probably like us three, we do seem to spend a lot of time reading. And, you know, if you're in a movement for, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, 15 years, then maybe it would be possible just in your spare time, just reading and studying to do something like an open university degree or just get in that way. Do you see what I mean?
I'm sure it's possible. I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. I met a girl who was doing that once. and I'm sure it is possible. I have found part-time degrees, though, very hard work, very hard work. But hey, you know, if you have the drive, the motivation to do it, and there's no greater motivation than to fight for your race and your nation and your religion and your identity, then I think you can make it work. You know, you look at all the famous law cases. His name escapes me. He's a French Vietnamese lawyer who defended Carlos the Jackal. He defended Klaus Barbie. Look at those law cases and, you know, try and get the transcripts from courts, not the press coverage of these court cases. The press coverage of the Joshua Bonehill case, the recent one, was abysmal, very one-sided. If you'd been in the court and listened to the whole thing, it is fascinating. It is fascinating. As I said, any sensible jury would have acquitted him. Any sensible person listening to Joshua Bonehill's videos would have thought, well, the man's got a point. The man's got a point, you know? And of course they won't. They won't give you the transcripts easily available. They won't report on these court cases fairly, because if they did, it would just bring more recruits into our ranks.
I think one of the problems that we have is naivety. People come across this information, they realise what's going on, and they think, well, I haven't done anything wrong. I'm not a criminal. I'm speaking from the heart. I'm exposing this corruption. Surely they won't go after me. And then they do go after them, and they do end up getting into trouble for speaking out. People that you know, they know that they're just being honest and pointing out corruption and pointing out something that's truthfully there. They know that they're not inciting racial hatred, and they don't expect to be attacked. So you get people that have this sort of thing happen to them like that, and you also get people that aren't, you know, that they'll go on Twitter and they won't use anonymous names or whatever, or they'll do it with a way that can be traced to them, you know. So you've got naivety. So you've got the most naive people that get prosecuted, like this Nimmo guy, or you get people that, you know, that are just speaking truthfully, that aren't inciting racial hatred in any way, like, you know, Alison Chablow, for instance, and then she gets taken to court for singing these songs. It's very brave of her to do what she's doing. It's very brave of everyone that we've spoken about, I think, in this podcast. They're all very brave, courageous people that have refused to recant and have stood their ground. I mean, do you know why Joshua Bonehill didn't actually take the stand and speak? Because I think maybe that could have helped. Because I know that Lawrence Burns has taken to the stand and spent a long time addressing the jury or addressing the court. But what happened with Joshua there then?
Well, I do not know the ins and outs. So the judge said it's a matter between the QC and the defendant. Joshua Bonehill wanted to take the stand. I can only presume the QC advised him against it. I would have let him take the stand because the jury was feminine. Joshua Bonehill, the photograph you see online, he's got a very short haircut, but he's got a normal haircut now. And he looks very presentable. He's articulate, he's eloquent, he speaks.
Is he handsome? English.
Sorry?
Is he handsome?
Well, I would guess so, you know. couple of girls in the public gallery were gawping at him, you know. They were legal students. They should have been paying attention to the court case, you know, but they were looking at him, you know, pointing out to him and whispering to each other. So I would guess he is. He should have gone in there and smiled at them. And, you know, we are dealing with the juries nowadays. We're dealing with people who are very easily swayed on very simplistic things.
Well, yeah, they obviously don't care about the evidence. I mean, he's a likable chap. I mean, he could have used his charisma. That could have brought them around, because considering all of this is about character defamation and trying to make blacken somebody's character, he could have used his charisma to turn them around. Because it's certainly not to do with evidence, is it, in these court cases?
Exactly. People, as you say, that are very naive. These sort of issues, free speech issues, do not occur on their soap television operas, you know. They do not occur on EastEnders, on Coronation Street. Therefore, when they hear someone giving these arguments about the showroom, about mass immigration, about the purposeful degradation of our society, they assume it's all lies because they've never heard this expressed before. They probably thought the showroom was a complete lie. They've never even heard of the showroom, you know, because these issues never occur on their television sets, therefore it doesn't exist. So you're dealing with people who are very naive, very simplistic, very brainwashed, very dumbed down, very feminized, very infantilized, and you have to adjust your message accordingly. You know, this is the problem with nationalism. We have to have a multi-pronged approach to appeal to everybody. You have to have a Ramsey Paul, you have to have a Greg Johnson, Countercurrents, you have to have a Occidental Observer. At the same time, you do need a Andrew Anglin, Daily Stormer, and all the rest of it. Different prongs, different approaches, all of them are needed, all of them work. I get so annoyed when, I mean, Greg Johnson's article on Countercurrents recently, Punching Right, I think it was spot on. I think there has to be differences of opinion, and we have to show that there are differences of opinion, different methods, different strategies. But when they start accusing each other of being state agents, that is ridiculous. There was one article on comment by Ramsey Paul saying that Andrew Anglin uses ghostwriters. And, well, he said a female friend told him this. Well, actually, I know that female friend, and it's a misunderstanding, you know. I write for the Daily Stormer. I'm not a ghost. I'm a real person. Jess Turner, speaking to you here, I'm not a ghost. And there's a lot of people who are in the movement who are very intelligent, but they have a lack of experience with humanity, with people, with organizing people, a lack of intelligence at understanding people. And this can cause all kinds of problems. And we have to understand the white race. We have to understand the people we're dealing with, and we have to attract all of them to the movement. A lot of people, when they first come across this ridicule, satire, it seems a bit vulgar to them, a bit of a shock. But they adjust to it. But we have to remember that some people are just naive, and we have to use emotion to appeal to them. We have to use charm. We have to use charisma. We have to use what Philip Stanhope, the 4th Earl of Chesterfield, suaviter in modo, fortiter in re, which means be suave, be urbane, be debonair, be sort of easygoing, willing to sort of, you know, compromise a bit. But deep down, you've got the fortitude. The aim is the same. You know where your ship is sailing to, and you're going there. The other, you know, you've got to use the graces. You've got to sacrifice to the graces. You've got to be elegant. You've got to understand the people you're dealing with. One size doesn't fit all. What say
more,
you?
More than one way to skin a cat, isn't there? More than one way to skin a cat. We've talked about this before. Me and Subal have on this show about you know, we don't agree with this punching right, but at the same time, you know, you try to give, you know, people that are avoiding the Jewish question a friendly nudge. You know, to say, come on, you know, don't cover that up.
Yeah, I call this this is my Operation Alex Linder. This is what I call this, because Alex Linder, who did VNN, he I read one of his articles, and he was talking about how we shouldn't let these moderate right-wing people get away with not talking about the Jewish problem. And the idea is not to just vilify them, and it's just to say, you know, it's like, okay, mate, yeah, you're doing a good job. You're talking about the right stuff. It's okay. But, you know, let's take it one stage further. Let's talk about that hidden elephant in the room that nobody wants to talk about. It's more of a brotherly thing than a vitriolic attack.
Yeah. An older brother saying, you're doing a good job. You're bringing normies into the movement. This is great. You're as good as far as you go. But you haven't mentioned the fact that all these people you're criticizing are Jewish. The fact that these ideologies you're talking about are Jewish. And a normal person will... People just don't attach themselves to one website, to one organization. They skip around a bit. And they will read something pretty moderate, like the traditional Britain group, and they'll think, good. And they'll go on to something else, and it will fill in a few more gaps for them, and so on and so forth. And when they see gaps being filled in, they will think, well, this site's even better, you know, so to speak. So, yeah, I think these people need a ramp, because, you know, the average person is pretty dumbed down, lacks education, a lot of reasons why he can't take the truth in one go. So all these organizations do very good. UKIP do a lot of good. But at the same time, you take a UKIP person and you say, well, have you heard of the Kudinov-Kalergi plan? And he goes, what's that? And you tell him about that. So I think what you're saying, yeah, a brotherly bit of advice, a brotherly nudge, you know, encouragement, always criticize positively, never negatively.
Can I just ask you a question, Jez? Is there anybody trying to repeal these hate laws? And, you know, if they're not, then do you know the process that you go about if you want to repeal these hate laws, and which act is the one that is smashing us? And
oh, there's so many, and they keep getting amended and what have you. And I forget the exact law that Joshua was tried under. Public Order Act is now a very catch-all piece of legislation, which avoids any mention of the word race in its title, you know, because there was lots of original laws about race relations and this and that, and they thought, well, this is a bit too much. Let's get rid of the Commission for Racial Equality, and let's call it the Equalities Commission, you know. So Public Order Act covers loads of things. And as for getting it repealed, the only real chance you have of doing that is to get a decent government elected, or to appeal all the way to the highest court in the land and beyond. Because if we look at Arthur Redfern, he was a bus driver in Bradford. He was a member of the British National Party. He was elected as a member of the British National Party as a councillor, BNP councillor. He was a bus driver. So there he was. A bus driver, a local councillor, a local BNP councillor. His constituents had put him into power. The bus company sacked him because he was BNP. And he said, this can't be right. I am a councillor. The people have elected me. You know, I'm sitting on the council, for heaven's sake. He took his case to this court, that court, kept on appealing, got to the top court, which is, in legal terms, the European Court of Human Rights. And they said, no, the council... the bus company was wrong. They cannot sack you. They cannot sack you for your religion, for your race, for your gender, for your sexual orientation. And now we have just ruled they cannot sack you for your political affiliation or your political orientation. This is a great change in law. It means that nationalists, in theory, can now earn a living without getting sacked every 5 seconds. So in theory, you could appeal anything and take it higher. And the problem, of course, is you need money. You need money for this, or time. Arthur Redfern, as he was sacked, he had no job. He had a lot of time on his hands, a lot of determination there. We owe a lot to him. But in theory, that there's two ways. A new government, or you have the legal... time, money, and expense to keep appealing and eventually win.
I would have thought that another way to go about it, or another thing that people could do, is looking to common law, where it's talking about the right to have free speech, the right to criticise the government, the right to say and speak your opinion unmolested. Because if you can find something in common law that guarantees that, then common law trumps statutes. So anything that's come since then, statutes that break that common law, you could take it through to the Crown Court and then come up with a common law right that tells you that you can speak your opinion, and then their statutes wouldn't hold up against it, as far as I understand the way that the law works. So,
great in theory, great in theory. I've been to UK column meetings, British Constitutional Group meetings, Lawful Bank, Man on the Land, these sort of meetings, and it all sounds very good in theory, but in practice, the judge will just ignore it. But yes, it gives you a very good basis for judging what is wrong and what is right. We've always had, shall we say, a public order act in common law. Any threat to cause violence, any threat to do something bad has been illegal. What we've never had is this sort of racial, sexist, homophobic, whatever you want to call this equality stuff, that somehow negates the need for any threat of violence or incitement to violence. There's always been, you incite someone to violence, that's a crime. It's always been a crime under common law. But now you've got this weird stuff. So I would say, yes, that gives you a very good basis for arguing. You say, look, it's common law. This is ridiculous, you know. But in actual practice, the judge won't risk his career by saying, you're quite right, I will ignore all this other stuff, and we will go with that. Judges are put there for a reason, and it's not purely because they're good at legal stuff. You know, the judge interprets the law, jury interpret the facts. As we've seen, the jury do not interpret the facts, and the judge, of course, does not really interpret the law. If he did, you'd be quite right, Sven. We'd be home and dry.
Yeah, the judges just appear to be directing the jury nowadays. But anyway, I think that's a nice positive point that we can end on here, that the European Court of Human Rights have decided that you cannot be sacked for your political persuasions. That is a very positive piece of news I think we can finish the podcast on. So I'll say thank you very much for coming on, Jez, and thank you very much for coming on again, Subal. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks with another SS Britannia for you, so watch out for that at radioarian.com.
Alternative to the anti-white system on RadioArian.com.